You're listening to Limitless Mind, Limitless Body. This is the Understanding You series, episode 3. I'm John Swanepoel. Joined again today by Paula Ruff. And our guest, Matawara Otoreki Takarihi. Based in Tauranga, Matawara blends ancient traditions with modern knowledge. His mode of delivery encompasses acupuncture, massage, and herbology, intertwined with traditional philosophies, ancient wisdom, and a modern understanding of science. Today, we are going to discuss the integration of ancient modalities into modern healthcare. Hey, welcome back today. This is, you're listening to Limitless Mind, Limitless Body. And this is the Understanding You series, third part of the series. Welcome back. Paula's with us again today.
Haven't
Hi, Paula.
We done well?
Yeah. Good. We've been having fun, haven't we?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And today we're recording from Kian's studio. So if you look on the Instagram page, you'll see us entering the studio. This is here locally in Tauranga. He's a sound engineer. So if you've got you want to produce any music or podcasts or anything, I'm sure he'll be really open to you coming and using his facilities. So I had a suggestion by my girlfriend through the week to explain to people who might be listening overseas, because I've noticed there's a few people in the States and the UK who are listening to the podcast and may not know anything about Tauranga and where Tauranga actually is. And Tauranga Moana is the Maori name, isn't it? And so we've got Matawara here with us today, who's a local healer and a traditional acupuncturist practitioner. So welcome, Matawara.
Oh, kia ora, everyone. Kia ora, John. Kia ora, Paula. Okay. Great to be here. Yeah.
So we're gonna be discussing some Maori health and Matawara's approach to health today, because this is about understanding you, so understanding all the different modalities that are out there in our community and around the world. And we want a better and deep, I'd love a better and deeper understanding of Maori health and how it resonates and aligns with some of the interpretations that I've been using, and I'm sure Paula is the same.
Yeah.
So Tauranga, Matawara practices here in Tauranga. Tauranga, if you land in Auckland, you just head southeast for about 2.5 hours to the coast, and that's where we are, in the Bay of Plenty, sunny Bay of Plenty. There's Mount Maunganui on the beach, and there's about 20k of beautiful, pristine beach. So there's heaps of surfing.
That's
and
so pretty.
It's awesome, mate.
It's so pretty.
So we kind of live in the dream, really, aren't we?
Yeah.
A very busy port. I think it's the deepest port, deepest natural harbour and biggest natural harbour here in New Zealand. So that's pretty busy. And you can, you know, drive 15 minutes and you're in the bush. So if you want to do a spot of hunting, we don't need licenses over here, other than you need a license for a weapon. But obviously the rest of it is, pretty much living the dream. 3 hours south. There's skiing in winter.
That's fun.
And so it's a beautiful place to visit if you're interested in coming to New Zealand once all this lockdown nonsense is over. And people can start moving freely, you know, it'd be really cool.
Mm.
If you've got any questions about what we talk about on these podcasts, please put them on the website. You can see where you can put that information in. We're sitting in here drinking tea. So you're going to hear tea being poured every now and again, and we're just chilling out. Hey, so, I mean, that's basically Tauranga, and that's where we're recording from. So, any questions about anything that's covered in these podcasts, please send through. You can record them or just email us, and we'd be delighted to answer at the end of the sessions.
Yeah.
So how's your week been, Paula?
Oh, it's gone so fast.
Another one.
I can't figure out where the days go.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I'm in the middle of the day and it's gone, crikey, it's only 2:30.
Yeah.
So it goes fast and slow. I don't know what's happening with time at the moment.
So you're born, bred Kiwi.
I am.
Have you ever had any opportunity to receive Maori healing or Maori health in your life?
No, when I had my pharmacies in Whakatane, I was aware of Maori healers around there, but it was something it never really came close to me across my radar. Mm. I was just aware of it, really. Mm. So, no, it was an aspect of health that I didn't get involved in.
Okay. What aura?
Yeah, I mean, I can understand the reasons why that is so, because there was a tohunga, which is a Māori word for doctor, witch doctor or what have you, you mm-hmm. know, like spiritual practitioner but, you know, they were professionals is the term that we'd use to this day.
Mm-hmm. So prefer spiritual practitioner than witch doctor.
Yeah.
That has a real negative consciousness behind it, I think.
Great.
You know, natural shaman. Healers and indigenous healers, I think that, for me, that's a much more honourable name for that.
Mm.
So there was in the early 1900s a Tohunga Suppression Act, so that people weren't allowed to practice the art, and if you were, you'd be thrown in jail.
A whole suppression act, so you couldn't do healing.
It's still alive to this day. Hasn't been abolished.
So how do we go about abolishing that then?
Well, because you know, like being sovereign and just continuing to practice and live.
Yes.
And nowadays it's not as bad or as harsh as it would have been back then, where a lot of practitioners went underground, a lot of information lost.
Yeah.
But I really struggled with the whole concept of the loss of information. But then I had one of my masters tell me that it's fine. It wouldn't have been for this time anyways. That's why it wasn't up to the practitioners.
Yeah.
You know, it had its time. Mm. It became extinct.
It was perfect
naturally.
For then. And
Because consciousness is constantly evolving. We're constantly shifting in consciousness.
Yes.
And I think that, the modality I use, like, you know, I've said it previously, is using muscle testing. Well, muscle testing as a phenomenon was probably been around for thousands of years, I don't know, but was first acknowledged in 1967. So it's only been around 53 years.
Mm.
A chiropractor practitioner in the States noticed.
Under
those pretenses, And then, you know, it's like, what is this?
Mm.
And questioning the subconscious mind using a muscle test, then you kind of, it becomes a lot more expansive. However, it's so alien, or has been for the last, I mean, the modality I use has been around since 1995.
Mm.
And it's still not fully understood, and people are still scratching their heads, but swathes more people are getting it. And understanding.
There's success achieved.
Well,
it's like, I want to.
I think it's also a shift in consciousness.
Yeah,
too.
Coming of the times.
Yep.
Yeah.
Alignment with the light, you know, the coming of the age of Aquarius.
Yeah.
You know, that's the language.
The waking up.
But we in Māori, we have the same, the bronze, silver, and gold age. We have the black, red, and white stages you see in the flag.
And the flag, mm-hmm.
Which represents the same as the Yucatali and all those kinds of things, you know, all the different cycles through mm-hmm. time.
Right.
And we're stepping into that, you know.
So which are we stepping into? The white?
Into the white stage, the stage of peace, of greater connection and less separation. And it's so, what's the right word? Settling for me. You know, it's a really settling understanding really at the moment right now as well, because we're in a space where there's lots of uncertainty.
Yeah, what the hell?
And
fear.
That's where I feel understanding the cycles really help you sit well with yourself, that, okay, it's all these things are taking place and happening, but in the greater picture, they mean nothing, you know?
Mm.
And I believe it's the adversarial energy that's having a grip. It's kind of like propaganda, really.
Mm.
You know, it's not real. It's not the truth. It's not the ultimate to the cycle and the coming of the times. But they're really doing their best to keep
hang on
with their nails right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's the reason why they're being so rampant and bombarding everyone.
Trying to manipulate in large groups and societies.
They don't have much chance left, right?
No.
Yeah.
I love that you say it is settling for you to know that there is a greater thing above what we are experiencing today or this week. That's really good. But at the same time, it's like, well, we can't just sit back and go, let's wait for the light. You can't. You have to recognize the darkness in order to flood it with the light.
Just because we foresee the light doesn't mean we can't align with it and do our best to contribute our part for it to really become so.
And that takes action. Mm. We can't just sit there and go, light's coming. Mm. Someone has to turn on the switch.
Mm. And it really helps us stay centered and focused, because if we do, well, for example, I experienced many times where I would ask a question and I knew that that question wasn't coming from a pure place.
Mm.
So when I asked the question, and I often wouldn't connect directly to receive that question from above or what have you, from greater forces and greater powers, but I did this time. This particular time, it sat with me.
Mm.
And I asked the question, and I received the warped answer because the question was warped.
Mm.
You know, so I realized that we have to be in a really good position, centered position, before we interact, before we inject or receive something for the flow to really be in alignment and flow and great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was great for me.
I think exactly right with the questioning side of things. My my personal experience had an awareness years ago was I asked the question, what would my relationship be like if there was no anger? And at the time I was studying a doctorate in alternative medicine. I was writing a book. I was treating my patients. I was taking my kids backwards and forwards from school because I was a stay-at-home dad. You know, I was studying astrology in the evenings. You know, I was pretty busy, and it took me about, because you know I'm not always that switched on.
Sometimes we're allowed to switch off.
Switched on enough.
It took me about 3 weeks to realize what had actually happened. But my question was, you know, what would my relationship be like if I had, if there was no anger? I lost all motivation. I was going, why do I? You know, why am I even doing this astrology? Why am I studying this doctorate? Why am I treating people? Why am I writing a book? Da, da, da. You know, it's like I don't, you know, I don't feel like. And then 3 weeks later, it kind of dawned on me that actually anger is the motivational force.
It's quite a driving force.
It wakes you up in the morning. It gets you going. It you know, governs your muscles, tendons, and ligaments. You know, from a TCM perspective,
free which flow is your, energy.
You know, free flow and regulation of that free flow. Mm. You know, and so the universe showed me that. This is you want to know what your relationship would be like without anger.
I had the same experience, to be honest, in a different cause or trigger, but the same experience. Like, wow,
yeah,
and actually got to love that thing.
Yeah, and so you have to be really, like you say, clear and specific with the type of question you ask, and that's what we touched on in both the first two episodes was, you know, asking questions where our power is. Because when you ask and you will receive, it's written, and that was awareness for me. You know, I lost the motivation in my studies and my, you know, my practice with, you know, the kids and everything else. If I had said, what would my relationship be like if my relationship with my partner or my relationship with my kids or my relationship with my patients or whatever be like if there was no anger? You know, if I was more specific, then I'd have been shown that specificity. Yeah, but other than that, it was holistic.
Just going back to the anger part, anger is a really useful thing to have. There's righteous anger, and I certainly have been feeling righteous anger lately, and I'm definitely motivated in a way I was never motivated. But any strength can become a weakness, and it's like being given a new hammer. You just want to try that hammer out on anything, and it's a terrific tool until you start bashing everything and destroying things. So there's a bliss point to the anger, and so not enough anger is lack of motivation. Too much anger is destruction. It's a fine line of balancing anger for the good.
Lots of different recipes. So if you look at an emotional state as a peptide, that's a neuropeptide that's been released in from the hypothalamus, it's kind of like a drug.
Mm. Oh, yeah, it's a little addictive.
It's that powerful. It's like a class Adrenaline. A, stronger than a hot class A drug, right? And there's lots of different flavors of anger. Anger, rage, fury, hate, blame, shame, frustration, resentment, you know. Mm. And there's different blends of this, you know. But for me, there's only two main reasons there's anger at present. One would be is fear.
Mm-hmm.
So anger is sort of, is there to take us out, drag us out of fear and get us motivated. And the other one, when there's a lie present.
Yeah. That's where I like to see that it's about speed as well. Like when you feel like you can't carry on with something, it's because you really have to slow right down to be cautious for situations of there's a liar in the house or whatever, you know?
And where's the lie?
Because when you're speeding up, you miss it. You can't see it and you just carry it on. So you're realizing something's not right in you, and so you have to change your perspective. And usually that's what I feel is the speed. And once you really slow down, your perspective trajects into where you really want to be, and you contrast, like you were saying earlier, you know the difference and where to align and mediate your position that you choose to be on.
I often see anger as a transgression of values. So if you do something that crosses the boundary of what is really important to me, that's where anger comes out.
So true.
And that's where what's important to me is not important to you. So you can't see what you did wrong. But here I am, huffing and puffing, angry, righteously.
In the reaction of the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so no real right or wrong or good or bad. It's just more about alignment, eh?
Absolutely.
The misalignment or so forth. And that's so crucial for us to be able to perpetuate and continue. Yeah. Otherwise, we just stop and stay with it.
Well, we get stuck in the story, so we get stuck in the reaction. And you can't help it because it's a peptide.
Yeah,
and so you know,
it is like a physiological thing.
It's like someone taking
which
a hit of heroin.
Control
you know,
of.
Yeah. I'm gonna take a hit of heroin. Yeah, but I'm not gonna react. It's gonna be in my system. I will not get high.
I refuse.
Not gonna
happen. And you're going up there, and you'll come down when your body's processed it.
Sounds like the TV.
Oh my god! Every night at 6.
Yeah.
And again at 9.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
Cool.
So this is a really wonderful place here in Tauranga for so many different aspects to really touch in. That's the main reason for coming here. You know, I lived in places that really didn't have a strong Māori hold on things, strong culture. I mean, I also whakapapa. Whakapapa is the word for family tree or our family line connection, bloodlines. And I whakapapa back to here, so that means a lot to me too. And coming back in and being able to support people is the greatest aspect of it all, you know, that are close to home. And this place, you know, has got very sacred ancient places here that are so deep and connected that they could even go back, the stories can go back billions of years to the beginning of time. Like I spoke about the obsidian crystal.
Yeah.
Which you've brought today.
Yeah, and
it's beautiful.
Huge.
It's massive.
It must weigh like 10-15 kgs.
Yeah, it should weigh it.
Yeah.
It is heavy, and it shows the history of this area and why people came here. And we've got ancient stories that you could, in some ways, talk if we take the personification out of it, that it was geological. It was geological movements, but we go and call Māori, look at all of what we call our deities, our gods, our goddesses, as living things still to this day, living. And so those geological movements and shifts were labelled with names and people. And so that connection, people instantly personify it and think it's just a story of other people. But I personally believe the stories go back, right back to the beginning of time, that express connection, movement, and in some ways we've kind of lost the connection with nature, with geology, the ocean, the sky, the sea, and that's what the main body and essence of what Māori medicine does is it helps us stay connected with nature, our human nature, our individual nature, our history, our family trees, nature, everything that flows within us, that's embedded in us, like we all know through our DNA imprints, you know.
I love that you guys have that feeling, I love that people have that feeling with that history. I don't feel a connection to my grandparents, sure, but any further past that, I just don't get what you feel, and I would love to.
But it's there, right? And it exists.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we all have the same makeup to bring us to this position, so it is there.
Yeah.
And that's a big question. That's a real conversation that we got to really look into, you know. Why is that so? And I don't believe it's got anything to do with race. It's a small group of people.
It's a humanity thing.
Yeah. Well, I think that...
And you do know, by the way, sorry, bro, you do know the stuff already because you resonate with it, so that's to know it.
Yeah, you know? Right.
Yeah.
I think Pākehā's too
fragmented. Know it up here but not feel it in the body.
We've all got areas to work on, you know, and that's why we have to come together.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that we can share those values and remind each other of the ones. It really reminds me of an ancient story. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Lost Tribes of Israel.
Yeah.
Māori are considered and said to be one of those tribes. So when these tribes went into the Dark Age, again, we're talking about the cycles of time, into the Dark Age, or that's the Black Stage in Māori, the Bronze Stage when everyone's starting to disconnect, and they realized that we're going into a stage where we are unable to carry all of the information ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
The relic itself is the information and knowledge of the people together. The most important thing in Māori is people. So that's the relic, is the people. And their values got separated and split up. And we can tell with the battling through the warring stages, the red stage, the fighting stage, the silver stage with metal and rocks and the fighting stage that... you know, we've been contending with that information and knowledge. Mm. And this is the time we amalgamate it all back together when we're ready, when we're prepared, when we align. And is the alignment up to us solely and alone? It's taken place on many people's fronts that I believe have those deeper connections, you know, sages and so forth. They have been achieving that.
Mm. Mm.
The populace haven't. It's now time for the populace to step into that role.
Mm.
So we're seeing it.
That's pretty exciting, isn't it?
And I think that, you know, Pākehā have naturally come here fragmented because they've, you know, the white New Zealand were pioneers, according to British history. Interpretation in history. Right?
Mm.
Whereas you guys have been here way longer.
Mm.
And way
yet
more
still migratory.
Yeah, still migratory, but through but the whole of Pacific.
But also not as well. Not, get into that.
Not quite as fragmented because you would have brought your whole whānau with you, wouldn't you?
Well, back in the day. The Māori that migrated here speak of people that were already here.
Right. Okay.
And that's when we start to really get into some crazy stuff.
Mm.
And I'm just going to throw it out there and carry on.
Yeah.
Which would be like giants and fairies.
Okay.
You know?
Well, that's written. That's written.
Yeah. I mean, it's not necessarily like these little minute things with wings that look like flies coming around and all that.
Tinkerbell.
Yeah, like Tinkerbell. not like Tinkerbell. Not that Tinkerbell doesn't exist, by the way. It's more along the lines of pygmies.
Okay. Mm. Right.
You know, like there's places that still have pygmies that exist in
Congo,
deep in the Congo, in Asia, in Indonesia, and in South America.
Mm.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
And giants, we still have giants that exist to this day.
Yeah.
And they're huge and they love to play basketball. Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
Actually, along that line, I was having a conversation with my brother the other night about Yeti in Alaska, how Yeti are. On this plane.
Yeah.
They reckon. Yeah. Mm. And they've been looking for them, eh?
Well, you also, labels and names and stuff. Yeah, again. Yeah. They found in South America, I'm assuming it was around like Peru, Central America. I can't remember. That crystal cave.
Yeah.
Huge, massive crystals. And they found microorganisms living within the crystals. And they said that they were identical to ancient crystals that were hypothesizing that they were frozen or not, or that they continue to exist, or that they re-injected themselves into this manifestation of existence because of the preparation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
yeah, okay. Just wanted to put that out.
Ooh, okay. Cool.
I mean, all this information is out there and it's written, but people pay lip service to it or don't believe it because they're
just
not.
Don't understand.
They just don't. Yeah, they don't want to. I don't want to believe it, I guess. I don't know. So what got you into, why did you choose healthcare?
I mean, I was born into it. I just didn't know it, you know, like being brought up Māori. My uncle, unbeknown when I actually formally started to study Māori medicine, I was like, I've already learned this. I've already heard that. already know that. Like stuff that is specialized. Mm-hmm. This isn't common Māori knowledge.
Mm.
Because my
uncle was a ranger in the Hunua Forest, which is maybe about, back in the day, it used to feel like 3 hours would take to drive to his place, gravel road forever. That's what it felt like.
No seatbelts.
No, we had seatbelts. I'm a little bit younger.
Sorry. I had no seatbelts.
There were times I remember no seatbelts in the old Holden.
Yes. 15 Kingwoods, kids in the bay.
The old Holden Kingwoods.
Yes. Wow. Anyway, sorry.
Had some memories. My grandfather, who taught me lots about medicine in many ways too, unbeknown.
He's a bit older than me.
Yeah. Reminds me of his green Kingswood. Yeah. And so, really, that was it. I regularly visited because my mother was a solo parent, common as well through our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so I regularly went to see my uncle up in the ranges. Mm. Would stay there for school holidays. I spent more time up there than I thought I did. He'd take us on walks and that. He'd be pointing the trees and telling us that's used for this and teaching us bushcraft and all that. So
cool. From
that point on, I was sold. I was in that world and it was settled.
Mm.
And then martial arts took over my life. And he was a big charge of that as well.
Mm.
For Christmas we got boxing gloves. Well, my cousins did,
mm-hmm.
but we all got them, you know. That's how it is in our way.
Yeah.
You know, we all, when one person
one
gets
pair
it,
for
we,
everyone.
Yeah. Or two pairs.
Yeah.
And then
yeah, you need two.
Yeah, which is so important.
Yeah.
You know, the sharing aspect of everything. Because that's what I kind of really want to express right now as well, that connectiveness that we speak of is about the colony, is about the team, is about the family, is about the group. That's the epitome of Māori. That's the epitome of Māori medicine. And why is it Māori medicine? Because it's been lost to a little degree. And so when we look in other cultures, it is generally about the individual self-striving. Once we really connect back together, then that self-striving becomes so much easier and fulfilling. That's the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I learned medicine and martial arts took over, and I just went, hundi, I have kind of a obsessive, compulsive nature. And so I went into martial arts and just immersed myself in it and saw nothing but martial arts, everything related back to martial arts. My teacher didn't help by saying, martial arts relates to everything.
Well, it does, the full circle.
Well, everything relates to everything,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of my science teachers that opened me up to the concept for medicine relating and being connected to everything.
Yeah.
And
it's
the, I know it sounds arrogant, but you will enjoy it just as much and all the other practitioners out there. It's godly. It's godly medicine.
It's open-mindedness as well. Totally open, allowing yourself to receive whatever shows up, you know, and that was the hardest thing for me coming from physiotherapy, and then it was opening into TCM, philosophy and techniques.
Mm. That was cool. TCM,
but it was too limited. There was too much measurement, too much, you know, it was, and it didn't. A lot of the time didn't sit right with me. There was more to it. I was missing something. What am I missing? What am I not? What do I need to know more about? And as soon as I started asking,
looking into my head.
Yeah. Well, as soon as I started asking the subconscious, as soon as I got my head around muscle testing, because even a physio, coming into doing muscle testing, it's a bit like, where's the red light? Where's the green light? That's what we need. But once you start letting yourself go and allowing yourself to receive that information. From the patient, it takes you down some really amazing paths, very expansive paths, and very expansive and unusual interpretations from people. Because I'm not a Ayurvedic practitioner in any stretch of the imagination, but we do have the foundations to that system too, and other systems. And so, if someone uses that interpretation as an example of how they want to shift internally and how they want their body to change and shift, it kind of, they say, that's what I was missing. It was okay, I can measure it. And yes, I know what's going on physically, but why was that caused in the first place? What emotional component is involved? You know, what trauma have they been through that they're still holding in their body?
That what made a perfectly good body? A measurement
isn't going to tell you.
Yeah. Well, it may not even be their own experience.
Yeah, it's that's
passed,
right.
I mean, it is, but it's passed on experience.
Absolutely.
We call the mimic.
The mimicry, yeah. Absolutely. Well, I mean, that's a learned thing, but you can also pick up other people's projections.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you walk into a room, you know there's an atmosphere.
Mm.
Yeah, I worked
so true. Transgenerational was just talking about environmental factors.
Passed down, genetics, walking, you know, someone else is having a rough experience and they're projecting that onto you.
Mm.
Your body still has to process that.
Mm. Mm. In Chinese medicine, we use the word predisposing factors. I mean, it's Western medicine too, but that's key factors.
Key, absolutely. Mm. And should never be ignored. It's part of the whole story, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, true. Mm. And so you did TCM too.
Yeah, so after martial arts, going intensely into martial arts, the main thing that tripped me over was, finishing school. So I was like, what am I going to do now?
Mm-hmm.
I went to my martial arts teacher, because I'm intense. So I was like, martial arts is it. That's all I've been doing. So I went, I'm going to be a martial arts teacher. And he was like, no, you're not. And I'm like, what? I thought, you don't want me to be your assistant instructor? And then he was like, no, you've seen how much I've struggled. I've had multiple jobs and everything like that. No, you're going to do it. You're going to be a martial arts teacher, but that's not going to be your profession or your job.
Mm.
And so I went away. I was walking down the street pondering, and then I saw an acupuncture chart.
Cool.
I mean, sorry, assigned to an acupuncture. And we had like 3 acupuncture charts in our dojo, our training area.
Mm.
And so, and I'd sit and stretch in front of them all the time, but we would use them for different purposes and to know those points and everything. And I was fascinated by it.
Mm.
And so I learnt essentially for the wrong reasons. I wanted to improve my martial arts.
Mm.
Which is to make me a better person, so it's not the wrong reasons.
Yep.
But it was to improve my fighting as well, in other words. And after, many years, I realized how superficial that was, and I moved from it, actually a few months. And then years, I consolidated. And then I went into TCM because he told me, no, you got to go to school to study that. I went upstairs and said, can you teach me Chinese medicine? Because I'd seen many things on TV and The Master and all that.
Mm.
And he laughed. And so I went and looked on the internet, and there was a school 15 minutes away in Wellington, Wellington, New Zealand, the capital. And so I started, and I have to be thankful for my cousin, because my cousin was a living guardian angel for that process, because I may not have done it. He didn't complete his course, but he, so thank you, cousin Paul Letton. And he paid for my initial fees. He helped me write up our testimonial to get in and everything like that, and so forth.
Made sure you did it.
He didn't finish.
Mm.
He was so against it. I'm not. I just can't. It's not for me.
Not for him.
Yeah. And I realized why he was there, and I'm so thankful still to this day. So I entered into TCM. Didn't want to leave. But also the same thing as what I felt with you guys after hearing some of your podcasts as well. There was that yearning for more.
Mm.
Yeah. However, I felt it was more in the areas that I wanted. So I went to China, started studying martial arts more in depth, access to Chinese medicine doctors.
Perfect.
So it was perfect. Got to go to hospitals and see how they practice there, and was disappointed. In some ways.
Walking around with the needles hanging out
reason,
of their mouth.
What reason were you in hospital? Not because you got whacked or something.
Oh, I went to...
Research.
I was taking people to the hospital.
You didn't get out the way, bro. You didn't get out the way.
Duck fast enough.
Point, get out the way. Don't be there.
Absolutely.
So it was through research.
It was through research and study and practices. Doctors wanted me to go to this area to look in and develop my practice. And then I ended up just spending time with one master who was a Chinese medicine martial artist. And he told me the complete opposite to my first teacher. He was going, no, the best job in the world is a martial arts teacher.
What? Conflict.
Get back into it, you know, like become only this, do that full time, you know.
So how do you...
what style did you do? Did you...
Over there I did Wu Tang, which is, it's not Wu Tang or Wu Tang, which is from the high mountains, you know, an ancient form, which is Bhutan medicine. I learned a special forces form, which is like bodyguard techniques and all that kind of stuff. They didn't teach us any firearms or anything like that, but it was involved in some of the training. They mainly went to the police and all that, learned that, those techniques. Yeah, it's a combination of Kung Fu, Qigong, which is like a very soft, gentle, health-based art, but also martial, and Tai Chi, like everyone knows, a gentle, soft art, but it wasn't how I learned it. Yeah, it was, it's one of the deadliest martial arts in the world, and extremely ugly and violent, but it's not practiced that way, you know. And only when you learn the moves, like one of the very first moves I learned was, you know, I won't do it here because the whole place will shake, but you come up and you scoop up the scrotum with your first hand, and then the second hand goes.
Ouch. That's a move and a half, isn't it?
This is even that's I a went... death move, really. That's the first move I learned in Tai Chi, one style of Tai Chi. And when you realize that, you start to open up the door that there is so much more to it than we've been told.
Much, much harder to help someone heal than to hurt them. Very easy to hurt them. Very, you know, and to the level you hurt them, that's a journey of healing for them. And it's really can be really destructive and really destroying. You know,
so true.
That's the way I look at that. Yeah. I mean, what I haven't mentioned yet, but I was in the military for 12 years before I studied physiotherapy. So I was a commander in the UK and studied a little bit of jiu-jitsu as well. With in fact, my sensei just nominated me for 25-25 yesterday. So
lucky you.
Back into the push-ups.
It's fine. Are you teaching martial arts at the moment?
Yeah.
So where are you doing that?
Where? So Health Quarters was a place that I've been doing, but since the lockdown, it's all reassessed. Ferguson Park in Matua and Arataki at the centre.
Yeah. What days are you doing that?
Oh, so we have to reassess all that at the moment. But Wednesdays, we're starting up Wednesdays first at Ferguson Park, Tuesday at Arataki, and... yeah, like Fridays at Health Quarters and stuff like that. So
I have to come along, mate.
Yeah, please do. Cool. Yeah.
It'd be good.
Yeah.
I need to start doing something like that again. I haven't done it for a while.
The thing that the combination one of my teachers told me that was beautiful was similar along the lines that you're talking about, was that the greatest doctor is a martial artist.
Yeah.
And the greatest martial artist is a doctor.
Yeah.
Why? Because if you are able to understand how the body doesn't work, then you can, you know, use that.
Or how the body's been hurt, how the body's injured,
doesn't like to go in that way, then you can utilize that, you know, or vice versa. If you know how it works and you know how it doesn't work, then you can stay focused in your position.
I haven't done martial arts, but all of my trainers are martial artists and they all refer back to that at the physical, mental and spiritual realms of martial art, and I find it absolutely fascinating. It's probably something I should turn up to your lessons too. How do you fit Maori medicine and healing? How do you blend that together with the Chinese forms?
Good question. It was actually really easy in the sense that I started to mediate the similarities rather than the differences, and there is way more similarities than differences. Whereas in with Western medicine, it was almost everything was oppositional the opposite.
It's just suppressed.
Yeah, suppressed is the correct word. You're right. Thank you for that. Because it in that space, it still so exists because I saw it, you know.
I like the interpretation. I mean, years ago, when I started studying acupuncture, one of my teachers said, you know, there is a train of thought that says that in Europe they were so destructive in that part of the world, you know, anytime they had a fight or a war or something, you know, the winners would destroy everything, you know, going back to Troy and the Roman period and Alexander Greeks and everything. They would just annihilate all the knowledge, all the documentation, yeah. everything. They just totally wipe them off the face of the planet. They were the winners. What we have is what's going to be. And so there was a huge amount of knowledge that was burnt and lost because of that from health. And they reckon that the TCM model of healthcare and the Ayurvedic model of healthcare was very, very similar in Europe as it was, you know, around the world, because it's an indigenous, isn't it? You know, and so in the West, they kind of had to start from scratch again, you know, 400-500 years ago. Literally start from scratch and document everything. And so they just went in a different way. And one of the best descriptions of the difference between the indigenous medicines and Western medicine is glass. Right? Mm. And so in the West, in the East, they knew this anyway, but it wasn't on the radar because their system had been there for so much longer. But in the West, they said, well, actually, if we cut glass in a certain way, we can see very tiny things very big. So what's actually going on inside the body? Can we cut the body open and have a look? You know, and that's what happened back in the day when they first approached the church and said, this body is an empty vessel. You're preaching that the soul leaves the body and goes to heaven or hell. So there is no soul in this body. Can we have it to research? And they went, oh, okay, well, if that's what we're preaching, yeah, you can. So they took godivas and started opening them up and having a look at what happened, doing autopsies and things and learning about the muscles and that way. So they went inward, whereas ancient medical systems look from the outside. And how is the environment and how they're living and what they're eating and their family situation and their personal situation affecting the body and how it's functioning.
Maybe they don't put as much attention to it.
Yeah.
Because you heard of Huatuo Jiaji?
No.
Can you say
it? Huatuo Jiaji?
He was a great doctor Chinese medicine doctor that had labeled and named and discovered the really close acupuncture points along the spine. And he also was a great surgeon, and he died in jail because he did surgery upon a emperor. The emperor, he was one of the emperor's retainers, and he was called in to do the job. And he did surgery. And this is back in,
a couple of years ago
before the 1600s
in the black phase,
yeah, maybe even thousands before, of years because before. They do refer to him in the Nanjing, which is an ancient text is over 1,000 years old, and the inscripts adhere to it too. So he was thrown in jail and died in jail because his treatment of surgery didn't work instantly as it would have, you notice with more relief with acupuncture or those kinds of techniques.
Oh, I see.
You see, so he didn't get the same results that he was used to, so it was wrong, didn't work.
Right.
That set the tone for surgery not to be continued and practiced in China.
Wow.
To some degree, people still practiced it and used it.
You'd have surgery if they had a serious injury, like a knife.
Or a broken leg,
strain it out, stuff like that.
There's also a lot of information in the Nanjing that speaks of them talking about the locations, body parts, and everything. So there must have been some autopsy.
They knew all of that. They were looking at more of the consciousness, the energetic system, and how to adjust it from that. And whether the yin and yang was out of balance because of what they've been eating, the environment they're in, the stress they're under. The family relationships they have, and all of that from that perspective. Understanding the consciousness, the meridian. So one of the cool things we have is we've recognized 36 levels of circulation in the body in 12 categories. And one of the categories is obviously the meridians. And so the interpretation of that is you break it down into three sections, sattvic, rajasic, tamasic, which is Ayurvedic interpretation of the gunas, right? And the sattvic is consciousness, the rajasic is the physiology, and the Tomasic is the
anatomical. And you know Chinese got five.
Yeah, yeah.
Maori got five.
Yeah.
Maori's got five.
That's cool. So Maori's the same as...
It's so similar. It's uncanny.
That's cool.
But that's what I wanted to also refer to about Maori surgery as well.
Okay.
So you heard... And that's what I was talking about, that alignment with ancient texts. And that's why Maori accepted and received Christianity so well, because the stories aligned. They were really similar.
Cool.
About taking... being born from the rib of Abel.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, Maori used to deliver babies through the side.
Really?
It makes more sense. You know, you've got like so much more work going on here.
For a cesarean, it was delivered through the side.
When there was a difficulty, the cesarean was through the side.
Serious?
Then we've got ancient stories. We've got stories that speak of the baby coming from... And you know, like, you just think it's just a fable that the baby came from the hip or came from the rib.
I'm going to go that.
That's really cool.
These are ancient stories. So it shows the interconnection and the overlapping and how it wasn't not there. It just has been overlooked because of the history.
She must have had a few brownies, bro, to go through that surgery.
Dude. It makes more sense, to be honest. Yeah. You know, when you look at it anatomically. That's what I mean, you know, for them to think ahead. Also, we can see cave drawings on the wall that have the kiwi embryo. You can see the kiwi. The kiwi is a native bird of New Zealand. And you can see on the wall, it's in the egg, and you can see the shape of the kiwi and everything within that space, you know, like it was transparent, like an x-ray. It's amazing.
On a cave drawing.
A rock drawing, I should say.
A rock. Right.
Yeah, rock drawings, because they're not necessarily caves, right? Down south. They're all over New Zealand.
Are they?
Oh, I can show you some later. I've got some on my phone that, you know, that I recorded.
It'd actually be really cool to go there physically.
Yeah, like...
bus trip.
I'm potentially heading over to Raglan, and it's called the Tattooed Rock.
Okay.
Mm.
I know there's one on Taupo, isn't there?
Yeah.
Big carving on Taupo.
Oh, those are recent.
Yeah, I think that's a tourism thing.
Is it? I thought that was...
Well, it's been done up as a tourism thing,
yeah, I mean,
it?
That's how it's been utilised. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, if you have a moku on your nose, can you describe...
This is a very intrinsic part to the returning and coming of the mark. It's the traditional mark you hear about in the Bible and stuff like that. But it's not the mark of the beast in the sense that we look to 666. It's the mark of the beast as in the flesh.
Okay.
That you feel your body, and you feel it when you get a tattoo on
your
nose.
Holy moly.
You feel it when you get a tattoo anywhere.
But the nose
is the most sensitive location on your body. So it's a statement in itself that I am really doing my best to stay connected.
Okay.
And this is in our culture, Maori culture, we press noses to introduce ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very young. I'm a fledgling. Mm-hmm. And I've still got lots to learn. Mm-hmm. So that's why I have an introduction.
Mm-hmm.
And this is perfect, because it is really assigned to Tauranga Moana. When you see someone with the nose tattoo, it will speak that they're coming from Tauranga Moana.
Oh, okay.
It's not only, or they have a connection to Tauranga Moana, or, you know, they were tattooed by someone from Tauranga Moana. So this tattoo is a representation of love for me. You know, everything I press my nose up to, everything that enters my nose, my love for my culture, my love for air and breath, this is what it represents for me. And you can see kind of like an arch on my nose.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a representation of symbolism, Māori symbolism for a healer.
Okay.
Generally. I don't like the term and word healer, but we all know what it means. And, a spiritual healer or what have you, or spiritual doctor, which we're not allowed to use, you know,
contributor.
Yeah.
Contributed to awareness.
I love that. Thank you.
What we're doing is we're creating awareness. Once we're aware of something, we can change it. Once the body's aware of something, once the different levels of consciousness are aware of something. So, I mean, there's lots of different interpretations of consciousness. I guess, you know, it's a state of being. We categorize it in four levels of the subconscious, you know, the subconscious, sub of the subconscious, sub of the superconscious, and the superconscious. Mm-hmm. You know, and the superconscious is God consciousness, light, 0 point, however you want to, you know, the most purest level of consciousness. Mm. And the sub of the superconscious is where the filters start. And you know, coming back to the 3 points I gave last week, for me, and this comes up over and over again and has done for a number of years, that where we make ourselves wrong is in the sub of the superconscious.
Mm.
It's so deep. Mm. It's one of the very first filters that...
Filters, you know, of beliefs.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there's lots of different... You know, and once we tap into that subconscious component of a person who needs help, who's asking for help, then we're in whatever way. So the subconscious from a TCM perspective is actually the practitioner having the awareness of which acupuncture points to use, you know, and doing the assessment from that perspective. You know, and there's
or the not to use needles.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Not to use needles, just to use, you know, finger touch.
Pressure touch, yeah. Advice. You know, like, no, they don't, not to touch them. Give them herbs, you know, or what, you know, it just really depends on the individual way.
Mm.
Yeah. And so, like, coming back to my nose, it reminds me to speak of a really important aspect of Māori medicine.
Mm.
We call it the alchemy of words, the alchemy of... a scenario. So sometimes you might hear me pausing because I have to translate and, you know, in some ways and interpret.
Well, use the Māori words so we hear them.
Yeah, okay. For sure. So symbolism, you know, the key to it all through our hand signals, through our body language, through our articulation and the sounds and tone and so forth, the symbolism. And you can see the symbols are a story. On my nose, you can see. And the reason for my nose is because it's the introduction. Eventually, my whole face will be covered. Okay. Eventually, my whole head, like a full helmet, will be covered because of my position and who I am and what I provide for the world and myself and what the world has for me. So it will become eventually as I grow and expand into this consciousness of being entrenched in my spirituality, it will grow. Because that's what it is. It's a representation of... You know, when you look at Māori culture, what are the most important things? Is embodiment.
Mm.
You know, like the tattoo is a representation of marking that embodiment. The kapahaka, the dancing and performance is about feeling our body resonating through sound and voice. You know, we tap and strike and we use items to articulate sound and movement and dance. And they're all about embodiment. It's all about the greatest medicine in the world, in my view, is everyday stuff. And Māori culture taught me that. Mm-hmm. It's about actually accepting everything that is right there, present in your very moment.
Mm.
You know, being connected with the very moment,
whatever
that is, you know. And accepting it so that you can grow and expand to be embodied with that experience, not to be separated in the head. Not to be just in the heart, you know, like, apologies everyone, but the stuff out there with the heart stuff, it really does upset me sometimes because it's true. And some people need to only hear that for the stepping stone into all of their spaces, all of their chakra, all of their different areas. So in Māori, we call the different chakras, their different atua or different deities.
Yeah.
And so we correspond to them and we listen to them. And when we're not listening to them, that's when we start to get disharmony, or we're listening to them too much, creating disharmony or imbalance. So the whole idea is to really be connected with all of those aspects. And, you know, like whether that's physical, you know, which we call like Tūmatauinga, it's the warrior god, the god. He's been dubbed as being called the god of war, but actually it's translated as the god of strategy. You see the
in action.
You see the linguistics in it. Eh? It's it's very different.
Mm.
It shows violence and fighting, but strategy is very different. It's life. We're in a constant battle for striving. You know, unfortunately because of the world. So when we change things like that, then that's the physical. Then we've got the atua. Rongo Mātāne, the god of peace and cultivation, you know, and all the energies that come with that. That's a very compassion and all the values that come with that. So remembering all of the different aspects is so important. Mm. And they're the same as what I'm hearing all the time from the beautiful people in front of me and around and about. The interesting thing is the language. And that's language is, again, the syntax, the you know, what we were talking about before, the symbolism, the language. And when we actually really overlook, and that's what I believe I've been gifted with, being born mixed, maybe mixed is not the right word, being born granted with diversity as I am, and experiencing that in the world by different types of medicines and stuff like that, they all came back to the same answer. You know, and that's so important to acknowledge, that we're more connected than we ever have been before.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I think I said when I came in, that there's no such thing as separation other than the separation we create for ourselves or others, you know.
Mm.
We're so connected.
We're on the tipping point of the wave, I think, with wakefulness, you know. Mm. People are, and it's like that 100 monkey syndrome. When you get enough people waking up, everyone wakes up.
I do believe this is a constant, though, right?
Yeah.
You know, like that moment that just you just mentioned has already evolved and shifted.
Yeah.
And I believe in eternity, so I think that we're constantly in that space if we allow and align with it, because otherwise we get frozen in time and we get stuck in a place.
Stuck in a loop.
Yeah, we get left behind or trajected forward. Some people are like, woof. Trajected super far forward, and they're like, I'm so alone. I says, you've got to wait 2 minutes.
Wait for us to catch up.
Ooh, you can start walking back.
Don't want to do that.
That's okay. Because then by the time they arrive, everyone's going to not be anywhere near they were, and they get the answer, and they're still not too far from home, rather than going all the way back. Just take your time.
That's what I hear of a lot of people who have been perhaps propelled forward a long time ago. They are waiting for others to catch up. And those ones who have been, those ones who were ahead of this game, you know, like 10, 20 years ago, are perhaps feeling a little bit tired. But the ones of us who are slowly catching up or fast, depends what happens. I think I know from my own experience, I come with an energy that is feeding the ones who have been waiting for me to flip and catch up. Energy is pushing us forward and reinvigorating so that more people can catch up. It's pretty exciting.
I hear you.
I'm just so grateful for the people that have allowed me to contribute to their lives, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's a really weird process. You know, I've been doing it this approach since 2005, and there have been, you know, a large amount of people that have allowed me to muscle test them and go through the process. Thank you so much. And I think that we need to acknowledge that is because, you know, without that we wouldn't be where we are today, and so that you know, people allowing us to contribute in that way is really important. I'm just grateful for that, eh? So it's really cool.
Yeah.
Oh, mate.
Wow.
Yeah, so cool.
I'm just feeling a bit wow at the moment.
Yeah, it's awesome. Thanks so much, Matawara, for coming along today, mate.
Oh, thank you for the offer. And I look forward to listening to so much more, you know, like listening to your guys' podcast. It's wonderful. So, guys, if you haven't listened to the prior podcast, go back, listen to them. Yeah. And there's going to be many more coming, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. And we want to get as many different, diverse practitioners in as we can. GPs that have also been trained in alternative medicine, and people that have been on a journey. There's a couple of GPs locally that have been on a real tough journey in their career and their lives because they chose a path less trod, if you like, from a medical perspective. You know, and they wanted to incorporate other things. So if we can get those guys in to chat, that would be awesome. So I'm looking forward to that. But thanks so much, guys, for coming in. Mata ora.
Welcome.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Limitless Mind, Limitless Body, the Understanding You series. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Swanepoel. If you would like to find out more about the subjects discussed in this podcast, or would like to contact one of the practitioners, their details will be in the About This podcast section below. Look forward to catching up with you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.